Hello and welcome back to another episode of Ope a Ghost. I'm Heaven.
And I'm Jonathan.
And we are a week out from our last ghost hunt.
Yeah, we are.
So shout out to Lauren and Gina from the Witches Familiar Paranormal Society.
Chuck, Philip, and Renee from Paradox.
Yeah, shout out to those guys too. It was really fun. It was a really cool place. I can't wait to go back. It's called Cheney Mansion. Oh, Jonathan's got his Witches Familiar shirt on.
Well, it's leaning on me. It's not on. It just happens to be on my
I wore
desk.
mine yesterday for free jeans day at work.
Yeah, thanks to Lauren and Gina for the t-shirt. Very cool.
Yeah. And Cheney Mansion in Jerseyville, Illinois was cool as hell, and I cannot wait to go back there.
Yeah, I would like to go back too.
So we'll definitely be back. Hopefully, once we get through our audio, maybe we'll have some fun stuff to share with you guys.
Yeah, that's going to take a little bit, but
Yeah.
while you're pulling that up, I was going to say thanks for listening. And while you're listening, you can always rate and review and download all those things. Make it so other people can find our podcast. That's how we grow.
Yeah.
Please and thank you.
It also just makes my day. It makes me a happy heaven. And as we say 20 times every episode, send us your stories.
Yeah.
opaghost@gmail.com.
Or there's something you want us to talk about. You know of a haunted place.
Yeah. Or if you want to go on a ghost hunt with us, yeah, just all the things. If you just want to say, hey, heaven, I like your hair, I'll say, hey, thanks.
Hey, Jonathan, you have a face for radio.
You have a face for a moth person.
I do, apparently.
Also, this is another thing you should email us about. Do you want Moth Jonathan merch? If you haven't been on my Instagram or the podcast Instagram, I made a photo when we were doing the Mothman episode. Jonathan said the words, I'm trying to picture if I wanted to be a giant flying person, how big my wingspan would need to be. And I said, now I'm just picturing Mothman with your face. And so I made a little Photoshop picture of it.
Really bad one, by the way.
It's terrible. I don't Photoshop. And for our 1 year podiversary, one of the gifts I got Jonathan was an Ope a Ghost podcast shirt with Moth Jonathan on it. So if you guys want this, we could probably make it happen. We'd have to do like a pre-order kind of thing, but we could make it happen.
Every kid at school that saw that was like, "Hey, is that merch we can buy? Do you have merch now? Can we buy that?" I'm like, "No, this is a one of a kind, buddy."
Let's do that. Anyway, in an Ope a Ghost first, I have a paranormal news update for you this week.
Oh, our first news update.
Yeah. Remember our creepy, maybe possibly haunted doll that we discussed in the last episode's paranormal news?
The one with the unfortunate hair.
Yeah, that one. She's found an owner.
Oh.
Deborah Davies, a celebrity psychic that's on a show called Unexplained, caught on camera. So she has given her a home and a name. What name would suit this creepy doll?
What name would suit this doll? It has to be something like Tabitha, or is it like some old British old lady name?
She went with a classic haunted doll name,
Oh.
Annabelle.
Are you serious? Come on.
And she way overpaid for her. She ended up paying £200 for that doll.
Well, hell yeah.
She was marked half down to £90,
It's
remember?
called supply and demand. If you want her, you gotta pay.
I see. Well, she believes that the doll is inhabited by an older spirit from that same area who lost their child. And unfortunately, she thinks the child looked a lot like the doll.
That's also unfortunate.
She plans to live stream an investigation with the doll, so we'll just have to stay tuned and see what happens. She said she owns like over 100 dolls.
Wow.
Yeah, so first Ope a Ghost news update. Haunted doll has a home. Too bad it wasn't a listener like I requested, but it is what it is.
Well, we'll wait. There might be an Opa Ghost second with a update number 3 after she goes live with her.
Yeah, for sure. She did say that she was on the phone with her daughter and was joking that they thought the doll's unfortunate hair that you spoke of looked like their grandma's hair.
Oh.
And then she heard from behind her where the doll was a little,
That's not creepy.
not at all.
Did she hear this with her ears or was it in her psychic mind?
Well, I don't know. She didn't specify.
Okay. I'm just asking. The people want to know.
Do they? Do the people want to know?
Mostly
do
just
you
me,
guys want to know?
but...
So, Jonathan, what are we doing today?
Well, thank God Jonathan's asking the hard questions.
Yes. What would we do without you?
Exactly. We're doing haunted cemeteries, of course.
Woo!
And guess who's going first?
Me! So I did a haunted cemetery in Maryland. Do you know about any haunted cemeteries in Baltimore, Maryland?
Not off the top of my head, but I mean, there's a lot of them out there because it's some of the oldest cemeteries in the country are out there.
I'm doing the Westminster Burying Ground.
Don't know that I've heard of that one.
Oh, I'm sure you have. My sources are Wikipedia, morbidlybeautiful.com, and frightfind.com. Westminster Burying Ground is located in Baltimore, Maryland, like I said, on the corner of West Fayette and North Green Street on the west side of downtown Baltimore. The very first part of the graveyard was established in 1787 by the First Presbyterian Church of Baltimore. 65 years later, in July of 1852, the Westminster Presbyterian Church was built on top of the graveyard. And I don't mean on top of like the Denver Botanic Gardens. I mean like they turned it into a catacomb.
Do what now? Like tunnels?
They built up the church so that the graveyard would still sit standing under the church.
So if I go into the church and go into the basement, I'm on like the ground floor?
I'm going to show you some pictures.
Oh, awesome. Because I'm picturing a church on stilts or a basement with tombstones.
It was literally built above the tombstones and the burial vault. It looks like a crawl space cemetery.
Well, that's weird.
It's so cool. Okay, let me share my screen with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not a crawl space.
I don't know that you being Sasquatch could stand up in there, but I could.
Right. Right there in the back, there's clearly a plaque in front of the mausoleum there, and you can read it and stuff like it's a touristy area.
And there's lights set up on the ground.
I mean, that's pretty cool. Oh, so some of it is literally on stilts, sort of.
Yeah.
And some of it's just in the basement.
Yeah.
That's just weird, though. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just...
I don't know. Maybe because it's Baltimore and it's crammed city. I don't know, but it's sick as hell.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Westminster Presbyterian functioned as a church up until 1977, when the church had lost most of its members to newer churches in the area.
Oh, so they weren't the cool church anymore.
Right. They were probably like, this place is haunted.
Well, there's that.
And the building was eventually sold to the University of Maryland School of Law. They cleaned the place up and they created a space for public use called Westminster Hall. It seems to me that they did try to be somewhat respectful with the way they built the church up on top of the graves. You know, the spaces were left open enough that you could still visit your loved ones. And it didn't seem like there were any graves that just straight up had concrete poured over the top of them to be lost and forgotten. However, once upon a time, grave robbing was a pretty big thing.
Yes.
Sometimes those grave robbers would consist of medical students looking for corpses to practice on.
Oh, well.
The legend here is that two students of the nearby Davidge Hall were caught while removing bodies and taking them back to their lab. And when they were caught, it wasn't just an easy, hey, you kid, put that body back where it came from, or so help me.
Put that kid back where it came from, so help me, so help.
I was hoping you would get that reference.
Nailed it, Sully. Nailed it.
No, it turned into an angry grab your pitchfork mob, and one of the students was hung from a nearby streetlight.
Wow. They don't mess around in Baltimore.
I don't think they do, no. And now his ghost also wanders the burying grounds.
So now you have the ghosts and the grave robber ghost.
Yeah.
The body count goes up.
I wonder if they rob ghost graves.
Oh, you mean in the afterlife? Are they digging up ghost graves?
There is also said to be the spirit of a woman who was at the time said to be out of her mind, so much so that she was buried in her straitjacket. And in the catacombs, it's said that you will hear her maniacal laughter as she follows you around.
Really? Under the church?
Yeah. That would be terrifying.
I mean, it would be. Not only are you in basically in the basement of a church, but you're also in a graveyard in the basement of a church.
In an old graveyard.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is about having that church above it, the good thing is none of the graves are deteriorating. Those things are in pristine condition.
Yep. There is also a lot of lore that many of the graves here belong to people who were buried alive.
Did you just Google the most terrifying cemetery in all of the world and this is what came up?
I Googled a cemetery with a haunted person, or a haunted, a famous person buried in it.
Ah, well, that's interesting because my cemetery has famous people buried in it too.
Ooh, okay. Once upon a time, it used to be pretty common to bury people alive, and it was a huge fear of people at the time, and they would be, you know, unresponsive or breathing so lightly that you were just assumed to be dead and you would be buried.
Or the doctor just was too drunk to do cocaine about it, and so he just didn't realize you weren't dead yet?
Okay, Hattie. Apparently, Poe even had a short story about it called Premature Burial.
Yeah, I mean, Madeline in, what was it?
The Fall of the House of Usher.
Madeline is buried alive.
Yeah. So because of that happening and people's fears, different things were developed to ensure that that would no longer happen. There were bells that hung by the tombstone and they could be rung from inside the casket. There were safety caskets outfitted with ladders and an air hole.
Mm-hmm.
They even had caskets with feeding tubes so that you could just drop some food down to them.
Here's a little snack while we dig you out.
Yeah. Sadly, that didn't matter for the Westminster burying grounds, and these spirits now also wander around the cemetery distraught.
It's sad. Don't get me wrong.
It's very sad. Westminster is also the home to the Skull of Cambridge, which is the decapitated head of an unknown murdered minister.
Oh.
Back when the skull was originally buried, visitors to the cemetery would report a horrifying scream coming from its burial spot at all hours, day and night. People who heard the scream would hear it in their heads for days, driving them insane and forcing them into committing themselves to psych wards.
Really?
Uh-huh. Because of that, the legend is that the skull was then dug up, encased in cement, and reburied. And now you just kind of hear a more muffled scream.
Yeah, it went from ah to
Yeah, less scary, I guess. You're right. Maybe I did find the most haunting, terrifying cemetery.
I think you found the most terrifying, horrendous, depraved cemetery in all of the world and said, let's do this one.
Because we got to get spooky sometimes.
That one's right up there.
On the less sad and horrific side of things, they also have the ghost of a former groundskeeper who in life was often a little bit drunk.
Oh.
If he thinks you're disrespecting a grave, his ghost will chase you off, brandishing a shovel. And one of the most seen ghosts is that of Lucia Watson Taylor. She died in 1816 at only 16 years old. She is most often seen as a figure shrouded in mist in an all-white flowy dress, kneeling at her own grave to pray. Now for the most famous grave at the Westminster Burying Grounds.
All right.
That is the grave of Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, yes. I know where you are. I knew where he was buried there, but I didn't know it had catacombs. See, I've learned something.
He has two graves in the cemetery, his original grave and then an additional monument that was built in 1875. Poe died in 1849. A lot of his family members are buried there as well. His original burial site is on the backside of Westminster Hall. And then, of course, his headstone is marked with a raven.
Isn't the new one like near the front somewhere, though?
Yeah, the front of the building is where his monument is. I'll put a picture of that up on the gram. It's just a giant marble monument with his name on it and an engraving of his face. So we all know that I don't know a lot of things.
You know plenty of things.
And this was one of them. Apparently, his death was very sudden and quite mysterious.
Oh, yes. 100%.
He was found somewhat unconscious and seeming to be rather sick. He was wearing clothes that were not recognized as his own. That's weird.
Yeah, they found him basically drunk in a ditch wearing someone else's clothes. They say he was drunk, but The thing is that, you know, he could have been drugged and he would have appeared drunk, but, you know.
One report I read said he staggered around repeating the name Reynolds over and over again. And he was taken to an infirmary where he died 4 days later, and he was buried on the grounds of Westminster. There was a more recent doctor who speculates that Poe died from a lingering case of rabies. But no one will ever really know. And when you have someone like Poe, gone too young and died mysteriously, it makes total sense that his spirit wouldn't be at rest.
Right.
Every year, on and around his birthday, which is January 19th, it is said that Poe is spotted wandering around the cemetery and standing near his monument where he is currently buried.
So he's not buried in the back where the tombstone is. He's buried up front near the monument.
My understanding of it is they got worried about gravediggers.
Oh, robbers.
Kind of like how we had with, not gravediggers, grave robbers. Kind of like we had with the Lincoln problems.
Right.
And they wanted him in a more like secure spot. So under that giant monument.
So they dug him up and put something huge over the top of him so people couldn't get to it. And
yep.
Got it.
Trying to communicate with Poe on his birthday has become a very popular thing to do for diehard fans of his. The people who have claimed to see his ghost say he is dressed in a black wool waistcoat and trousers, a wide-brimmed black hat, and a dark-colored scarf partially covering his face.
How do they know it's him then?
How do they know it's him? Because it's Poe.
I've never seen Poe wear a hat, and if he's wearing a scarf over his face, it's like he's a spy or something. How do you know that's him?
It's not actually a ghost. It's just a Poe impersonator, and he doesn't want to be seen. Well, they say you will also hear the tapping sound of his iconic walking stick.
Oh.
Hitting the ground as he moves about. Should we go ghost hunt Poe?
Put it on the list.
Okay, I will. Can we do it for my 35th birthday?
Yeah, sure. I mean, wait a minute. Isn't that October?
I'll be 34 this year.
Oh, so we got a year to plan a trip to go see Poe. Okay.
On the non-paranormal side of things, but also still very mysterious and spooky, there has been an unnamed living man who dresses up similar to Poe, and he places a glass of brandy and a rose on the grave every year on Poe's birthday. And I think his name might be Jonathan.
Well, it's not me.
Are you sure about that? Are you sharing your brandy with Poe?
No, I'm not, because I only get it once a year. It's usually not around until January 19th. It was this year.
And now you have more.
I do. I swear that I've read or heard in a documentary, and I could be completely wrong, but I swear that I read that Poe was hyper allergic to alcohol, such that I can have a glass of brandy and, you know, be fine, but Poe would have a glass of brandy and be wasted.
Oh, so Poe was like me.
Well, yeah, except his was like really bad. And so like a glass of beer or a, you know, a whiskey or whatever would really rock his world. It didn't take much to get him drunk. So the story goes, if I'm remembering it correctly, because of his hyper, you know, whatever, he didn't drink. And so the fact that he was found drunk was like really weird because, you know, he didn't drink because he was so sensitive to it that, you know, he would lose control if he, you know, he would be like totally wasted. So it would make sense that he was like wandering around.
Well, and then even if he wasn't drugged, somebody could have forced him to drink or gotten him drunk and still had the same effect on him. Like he still would have made him really bad.
That's true. He had a lot of enemies.
Why did he have a lot of enemies?
He was a critic for a newspaper while he was trying to become the famous writer. He didn't become the rich and famous Poe until he was dead.
Right.
He was a newspaper critic, and he was called the Tomahawk Man because he would just
throw in daggers.
Yeah, demolish people. So he had enemies. So it's possible that he was drugged.
Wow. If anybody knows the identity of this secret brandy and rose man, it's been kept a secret. There's some speculation that it's now a different man. The original may have passed away and someone has taken his spot.
Right.
But nobody knows.
Nobody just waits for him to show up and says, "Excuse me, sir.
Who are you?" You know, unrelated to ghosts, but apparently Now I can't remember if this was in LA or St. Louis, but I saw an article that there's a mysterious jar of pickles that is on a guardrail of a interstate, and nobody knows who keeps putting it there. But if the pickles like gets broken, or if it somebody takes it, another one will reappear there the next morning.
Ghost pickles.
And no one has ever seen who puts the pickles there. So it's the same thing. These people are just sneaky and mysterious.
You know, our two cemeteries have more in common than you think. One, they both have famous people.
After I talk about pickles?
Right. And two, they have a person in black who visits the grave of one of the people.
Oh, well, I can't wait to hear, but I have a little bit more for you. This is a short episode for me, but I have a tiny bit more. Poe's ghost is said to haunt many other places in the area. There is a saloon, actually the oldest saloon in Baltimore. It's called The Horse You Came In On.
Fantastic.
It opened in 1775. Y'all right?
That's just the best name. That's the best name for a saloon.
It's not the best name. The best name is Bunghole Liquors, but it's okay. The second best name.
Second best name. We'll agree to disagree, but those are both fantastic.
They are. It opened in 1775, and it continued to run even during Prohibition.
Of course it did.
It was supposedly the last place Poe was seen before his death. And now people report seeing his ghost walking the streets and heading to the saloon and see him inside as well. He also haunts the Baltimore home that he lived in for a short time with his aunt slash mother-in-law and his cousin slash wife.
Virginia.
People were just all weird and creepy back in the day. Every last one of them.
I'm not so sure that even then marrying your cousin was exactly cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The house is now a museum, and his grandmother's ghost is there as well. And she did die in the house. And that's all I have for you about my haunted cemetery and Poe and the catacombs and the murders and all the things.
The underneath of that cemetery is really cool. You definitely have to put that on the gram because that one picture was really neat.
So where are we going on this cemetery journey with you?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yes, that's why I'm here.
Oh, yes, I forget. We are going to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Hollywood, California.
I love this cemetery.
The cemetery is the resting place to over 400 people who would be considered celebrities in some way. Everyone from movie, TV actors, musicians, famous criminals like Bugsy Siegel.
I don't know who that is.
He's one of the gangsters from the gangster days back, you know, back in Jelly's time.
Oh, good old Jelly.
Never mind the whole slew of writers, producers, cinematographers, directors, you know, politicians. There's a fashion critic there. There's a fitness guru there. And Elmer Berger, inventor of the rear view mirror.
Wow. Hey, Elmer, I don't use that thing.
What?
I have a backup camera.
Well, I do too, but you can't throw it in reverse when you're driving down the highway. You got to use the mirror.
I don't use my mirrors.
So I have five sources. One of them is the actual Hollywood Forever Cemetery website. There's a alphabetized list of celebrities.
Oh, I like that.
So I'll post the Wikipedia link to that, and you can see all the celebrities buried there. But in terms of actual sources, I have LA Ghost Tours. I have an article called The Fatty Arbuckle Trial, The Injustice of the Century. You'll figure that out when we get there. Clifton Webb's ghost is another thing. And The Cursed Ring, an article by D'Antonio Caterina.
Ooh.
According to HollywoodForever.com, the cemetery is located at 6000 Santa Monica Boulevard in California. It's a full-service cemetery, funeral home, cremation service provider, and this is the part that weirds me out, cultural event center located in the heart of Hollywood.
What?
Apparently they hold concerts there. They have other things that go on there.
That's kind of epic. I want to go to a concert in the cemetery.
100%. Founded in 1899, the National Cemetery is one of the world's most historic places and the final resting place of hundreds of Hollywood legends, including Julie Garland, Cecil B. DeMille, Rudolph Valentino, Mickey Rooney, Douglas Fairbanks, Johnny and Dee Dee Ramone, Valerie Harper, Chris Cornell, hundreds of others, and is also the burial site of thousands of neighborhood residents and individuals from across the globe. It's not just famous people. Normal people are buried there too. The functioning crematory, mortuary, funeral home, and cemetery provides lawn spaces, memorial services, cremation niches, cremation services, mausoleum crypts, and a range of premium cemetery services. And yet it's a cultural center.
That's so weird.
It also has the oldest active Jewish cemetery in California.
Wow.
As Los Angeles's most dynamic cultural event center, Hollywood Forever welcomes families and visitors to concerts, films, and events each year, according to the website.
I mean, I'm here for it.
It was known as the Hollywood Cemetery until 1939 when it was changed to Hollywood Memorial Park. And then in 98, it was changed again to Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Santa Monica Boulevard is on the north side, New Grover Street on the west, Melrose Avenue on the south, and Van Ness on the east. Makes kind of a one large block, but it's split almost exactly in half. And this is kind of the interesting thing about this. This giant block is about 80 acres.
Holy moly.
The north 40 acres is the cemetery. The south 40 acres is the lot where Paramount Pictures is located.
Ooh, that's creepy. I like that.
Only a wall separating the two. In one picture I saw, it looks like you could lean against the back wall of Paramount and be 5 feet from a headstone. Pretty much the same way that pub was in Salem.
Ooh, do you have a picture for me?
I do, if I can get it on my shared screen. You see that? That wall?
That's the lot?
That's Paramount. This is the cemetery. Here's another picture. This is Paramount. And you can see those headstones right there?
Yeah.
Is that insane or what?
No wonder Paramount Lot is haunted.
Let's talk about the ghosts. According to LA Ghost Tours website, one of the most common encounters is a woman crying on the lake that is located on the same grounds as the cemetery.
They have a whole lake out here too?
Yeah, well, it says lake, but it's more of a pond, really, you know? It's not like, you know, Lake Springfield big.
Okay.
Where was I? You interrupted.
Oh, sorry. Now you're dying.
Now you're choking me up. One of the most common encounters is a woman crying on the lake that is located on the grounds of the cemetery. LA Ghost says that people think it's an actress who died back in 1921. The death of the actress was said to be linked to another actor, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Some of the information that I'm about to give you has come from about four different places. Rudolph Valentino is one of the people buried in the cemetery. He's in one of the vaults. You know, you can walk up and see the plaque on the wall.
Yeah.
Valentino, I don't know if you know who he is, but for those who don't, he is nicknamed the Latin lover by Hollywood moguls who are looking to promote him as a kind of manly sex symbol. He was a huge silent film star. He was the first kind of, you know, sexy guy that everybody lusted after. Massively popular, died at an early age of 31. His death caused mass hysteria among his fans. He is, without a doubt, an early film icon. When he died, over 100,000 people gathered outside the funeral home. There were rumors that a wax mold replica was used to protect the body at the service.
Weird.
He died in New York, but he was brought to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery and placed in a temporary spot in the Cathedral Mausoleum. The spot where he is was supposed to be temporary. There was a woman who was a really good friend of his, and she had bought side-by-side slots in the wall, ends up getting a divorce from her husband. And so when Valentino died, they put him in this vault because they were going to build a literal monument outside in the cemetery, but something happened and that never happened. So he ended up just staying in the slot he was in the temporary slot. She ends up dying a year later, and now she's interred right next to him.
Well, it all worked out in the end.
Legend has it, and this is, I told you there was this thing I found. This is what I found.
Oh, okay.
That's really the more of the paranormal stuff. Legend has it that Valentino owned a ring that was cursed.
What?
Yes. After he died unexpectedly, it is said that the next six people to own the ring all became seriously ill or died while it was in their possession.
No way.
Yes. So there's an article called The Cursed Ring, and it basically says that in 1925, Valentino was on vacation in San Francisco. And while he was walking down the road, he sees this ring in a shop window. Source wasn't sure about much in terms of what the ring looked like, you know, in terms of was it gold, was it silver? But everyone agrees it had a single tiger's eye gemstone in it.
Okay.
It's not really an exceptionally valuable, you know, it's not like a, you know, a ruby or anything. It's a relatively inexpensive gemstone. But still, Valentino liked it and insisted on buying it. Oddly enough, the shopkeeper resisted selling it to him. He told him it's cursed and that it's called the Ring of Destiny. It's brought misfortune to all its previous owners. But Valentino didn't heed the warnings and buys it anyway. That was in 1925. On August 15th, 1926, he collapses at the Hotel Ambassador in Manhattan.
Hold on. Retell me those dates. When did he get the ring?
He got the ring in 1925.
And he died a year later?
A year later.
Wow.
On his finger, as always, is the Ring of Destiny, which he never takes off.
Weird.
At the funeral, drama unfolds, staged mostly by a woman named, and again, this is their version of events. I haven't corroborated any of this. I found it last minute. Staged by a lady named Pola Negri, who was a Polish actress who was very familiar and very good friends with Valentino. She's overcome with grief, nearly faints multiple times, collapses in front of the coffin, claiming she and Rudolph were engaged.
Oh.
According to them, something nobody had ever heard until then. I don't know if that's true or not, because other things said that they were engaged. But anyway, she claims they are engaged. So for the funeral, Pola sent 1,000 red and white roses arranged to spell her name, which sounds like a huge narcissistic move to me.
Sounds really, really stalker. Like you're a stage five clinger lady. He's dead.
Your apparent fiance is dead and you send 1,000 roses spelling out your name.
Your own name?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Just so everybody knows who I am.
Yeah. So, well, when it comes time to choose a memento of her beloved, she selects the Ring of Destiny.
Of course she did.
Still had it on his finger at the time.
He probably thought it was valuable. She took it off his hand.
Yeah. So the story seems to go. Yes.
Whoa.
So the Ring of Destiny passes on to her. Does she believe in superstition? Does she ignore them? No one knows. But after she recovered from her grief, her career is never the same. Even in her personal life, luck doesn't smile on her in the least bit.
Wow. That's just karma.
Yeah. Well, I guess to some degree. Yeah. And, you know, and maybe just the way she behaved at the funeral and, you know, sending the roses with her, and people were just turned off by her. And
why would we hire this lady?
Yeah, she seems like a wackadoodle. So anyway, she gives the ring to Russ Colombo. He's a singer that she had worked with who was known for his resemblance to Rudolph Valentino. It kind of looked like him.
Oh, that's weird.
They called him Rudolfo of the radio.
Okay.
Mainly because the songs were intense and romantic. And, you know, that was kind of Valentino's shtick, you know. He writes his songs for the woman he loves, who was Carol Lombard. She reciprocates. And then on September 2nd, 1934, the two have a reservation at a nice restaurant for dinner. In the afternoon prior to the reservation, Russ visits a good friend of his who is photographer Lansing Brown. Of course, he's wearing Valentino's ring. Brown has an extensive collection of antique firearms.
Oh, okay.
You can see where this is going, right?
Uh-huh.
As the two friends are sitting in the library, he shows Russ a dueling pistol. Unexpectedly, the pistol goes off and a piece of the bullet ricochets off a table and strikes Russ Colombo above his left eye, dies in the hospital at the age of 26.
Wow. I hope he learned not to keep his guns loaded.
Right. I mean, I don't know. So now we've got two deaths and a trashed career, some of which may have been karma, some of which may have been coincidence.
Well, I think the ring probably also said, here's your karma, biatch.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Of course there's more. It's a haunted, cursed ring.
Right. So to avoid upsetting Columbo, Russ's mother, who had a heart condition, Columbo's brother kept up the charade that Russ was still alive and well for 10 years. Carol Lombard even wrote letters to Russ's mother imitating his handwriting.
Wow.
Yeah, Carol herself dies tragically 8 years later in an airplane crash.
Did she ever wear the ring?
I don't know. She might have picked it up.
And she got that cursed juju on her.
I don't know. Did it go to her? I mean, they weren't married. They were just, you know, dating or something. But anyway, the Ring of Destiny ends up in the hands of Joe Cascino, who is Russ Colombo's best friend, who is also in show business. With a name like Joe Cascino, why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
He's heard the stories about the notorious ring, you know, about it being cursed, and he puts it on in a display case, figuring that, you know, he's not wearing it. It's just on display. Can't hurt him. Few months go by and he decides, you know what, superstitions are stupid, and he goes ahead and wears it.
What an idiot.
Now he's wearing the ring. The following week he gets hit by a truck and dies.
Oh wow, I don't mean to laugh, but that's terrible.
Yeah.
He gets hit by a truck and dies after saying superstitions are stupid.
This is stupid. I've had the ring for a while. Nothing's happening. I'm just going to go ahead and wear it and enjoy it, you know, like
I bet as a
else.
Ghost, he said, wow, that was dumb.
Dumbest thing I ever did was put on that ring. At this point, the ring's reputation, you know, precedes it. So no one wants to do anything with it. No one wants to see it, not even from a distance, except for Joe's brother, Del, who inherits it and wears it without any misfortune. However, he normally keeps it locked in a safe.
Do you think it's maybe one of those things where, like, the ring chooses you and he's an okay person to have the ring?
I don't know. Once again, but wait, there's more.
Oh, okay.
The brother puts it in a safe. Rumors spread around that the ring is there and, you know, people want it because it's the Valentino ring. A guy named James Willis learns about the ring and decides to steal it. He goes in, an alarm goes off. The police arrive in a flash, and as Willis is running away, the officers shoot and kill him.
Wow, that's immediate bad luck.
Yeah, like literally moments after possessing the ring, he's dead. So it's found in his jacket pocket and is returned safe. Edward Small, a director, hears about the cursed ring and wants to make a film about Rudolph Valentino. He hires Jack Dunn, who was a professional skater and good-looking guy who was, you know, wanting to try his luck in movies and everything. So the director manages to obtain some of Valentino's belongings, including the ring.
Oh.
The actor wears the ring for 2 weeks, does his screen test, and reportedly everything went perfect. To celebrate, Jack goes to Texas with friends. A week later, he dies of a rare blood disease. He was 21 years old.
Oh my gosh.
No one knows where the ring is now.
It's just all so tragic. Like, geez, Louise.
Yeah, if I were you, I'd stay away from old-looking tiger's eye rings that you see in antique shops.
Stay away from them. Go ahead and buy them. Mail them to our P.O. box.
If you need that, opaghost@gmail.com. We'll tell you what it is. Some say Valentino's ghost roams in search of his ring to destroy it. Others say that every Valentine's Day, his fans gather at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, leave gifts, letters, roses, all that sort of thing. And many swear they've seen him wandering among the shadows.
I really need to know where the ring is. It's like a treasure hunt now. Can we get Josh Gates on this? Where's the ring?
Yeah, where is Valentino's ring? I imagine somebody knows, but they're probably not talking.
Maybe they think if I don't tell anybody I have it, I won't get the bad luck.
Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, flaunt it. I'm just going to say I've got it for safekeeping.
Yeah.
Maybe people who need to know. And if you want it, it's here. I'm not wearing it. I'm not flaunting it. I'm not taking pictures and putting it on the news.
That's interesting.
Valentino's dog, Kabar, is said to also not be at rest and haunts the pet cemetery in Calabasas.
Oh.
Another thing about Valentino, after he was laid to rest, there was this mysterious woman in black who kept showing up on the anniversary of his death, dressed from head to toe in black, including a veil. She'd leave roses on the grave. People, for the longest time, thought it was Pola Negri, the woman who was supposedly engaged at the time of his death. Many people have claimed it to be someone else. Many women have come forward and said it was them. None of them have turned out to be true, but there is a video on YouTube. She died in like 1977 or like the late 70s, early 80s, I believe. The guy says, this is the woman in black. And she's like buried 100 miles away. On her gravestone, it says, the woman in black.
Okay, so she's a ghost or she's a real person that goes there?
She was a real person, but now people say they see the ghost of a woman in black near Valentino's grave.
That makes so much sense to me if residual hauntings are a thing.
Correct.
Because she did it so often that now, of course, why wouldn't she do it as a ghost?
Yeah, and if she did it all those years, and, you know, she did it for a reason. She, you know, you don't make a pilgrimage out to someone's grave every year on the anniversary of their death unless there's some sort of emotional.
I bet she had the ring.
Maybe, who knows?
She was probably buried with it. We need to go. Never mind. Never mind. We're not going to rob a grave.
No, what is wrong with you?
I want the fucking ring, Jonathan.
Precious. Habitus. The thing about this Woman in Black story is every website I found talked about the ghost of the Woman in Black, but I could find nobody that, no stories where somebody actually said, it was a dark and stormy night. It was a Thursday and I was out there doing this and I saw, I couldn't find anything like that. So couldn't find anecdotal evidence, but that's the tale. Another famous ghost out there is Clifton Webb. Clifton was a very popular actor in the 1950s. He had films, The Stars and Stripes Forever, Titanic, and the original Cheaper by the Dozen, which has been remade a couple of times, including one version that had Steve Martin in it.
That's the best version. He's in Titanic?
There was a Titanic movie in the 50s.
I didn't know that. What?
Yeah, it's not the Jack and Rose, not No Room for You on the Door movie, but...
Well, I understand, but it's the same Titanic story, right? Just without Jack and Rose.
I believe so, yes.
Interesting.
Webb was also important to Hollywood in terms of history because he was one of, probably not the first, but one of the first openly gay actors.
Oh, wow.
You know, this was a time when nobody that was, you know, nobody came out.
Right.
He wasn't afraid or ashamed. And I think part of the reason he was successful is because he played a lot of comedic characters. So, you know, he's kind of typecast a little bit in that way. He never dated in public. No one ever saw him out with anybody. If he ever went someplace where he needed a date, you know, what would traditionally be a date, go to dinner, he'd go to some Hollywood party or something like this. He always brought his mother.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, he was a very likable guy. So the story goes, there was a particularly mean director that asked Clifton a personal question. Are you a homosexual?
Oh, wow.
Supposedly draws himself up to his full height and replies, devout, my boy, devout.
There you go. He didn't take any shit.
No, he did not. Everything I read, he wasn't like, you know, aggressive or mean. He was just so humorous and, you know, likable that people just didn't care for whatever reason, which was unusual. But he ends up paving the way, of course, for LGBT actors and things. Of course, it would take time.
Well, I love him.
Yeah, he seems like a really neat guy. Supposedly through the best parties.
Well, of course.
He haunts the Psalms and Abbey Mausoleum. People have heard whispering voices, strange lights, cold spots, drafts, smell of cologne coming from the mausoleum or inside the mausoleum. Not only does he haunt the gravesite, but he also haunts his old house. There's a guy named Alan Hunter from alanhunter.com. I'm not sure who Alan is, but he had an article about him and I read it. And he says, rarely will you find accounts of ghosts haunting their gravesite, but Clifton Webb is the exception to the general rule. Webb's restless spirit has been seen haunting the crypt in the section known as the Sanctuary of Peace, where his mortal remains were laid to rest. Mr. Webb is always seen fastidiously dressed in his dapper suit and sometimes has been known to startle visitors by yelling at them in his distinctive voice. There are even a few accounts of Mr. Webb haunting his old house at 1005 Rexford Drive in Beverly Hills before it was torn down many years ago. It has been claimed that the reason for his haunting is his reluctance to relinquish his fame and the fear that his legacy might be forgotten.
I'd like to know what he yells at people.
I would too. He goes on to say that the precursor for these ghostly visits by Webb in his burial vault is the unnerving sound of the marble slab that covers the opening shifting back and forth.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah, yeah. It's moving back and forth in the frame enough that you can hear it making noise.
That's like classic, creepy, old school, ghosty stuff from a cemetery. I don't like that at all.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Hunter says, I can tell you from firsthand experience, this slab does indeed move to and fro within the slot that covers the burial cavity. I had heard these legends and visited the Hollywood Forever Cemetery 9 years ago to test the theory. I will tell you that it's an eerie feeling and an even stranger sound. If I were alone in that vault and heard that sound without explanation as to whom or what was causing it, I would not stick around to see if it was my famous fellow Hoosier, Clifton Webb. Apparently he's from Indiana.
Yeah, that is so unsettling. It's almost like zombie level creepy.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but it's also so cool.
Yeah, he's like, here I come, you know, announcing it in some way.
Ooh.
Last ghost is Virginia Rapp.
Okay.
Virginia was a model and a silent film actress, also in the 20s. She mostly had bit parts. She wasn't really famous at the time. It wasn't until she died that she got very famous. Probably most people didn't know who she was until she died. Here's what happened. Virginia attended a party on Labor Day at the St. Francis Hotel in 1921. There was a celebration for an actor named Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. He reminds me a lot of Chris Farley.
Oh.
Very athletic for his size. You know, Chris Farley could do some crazy things for a big guy, you know?
Yeah, he could.
He was a silent film actor. He was a director. He was a screenwriter. He mentored Charlie Chaplin and Bob Hope. He brought vaudeville star Buster Keaton into the movie business. One of the most popular silent film guys of the 1910s and the highest paid actor in Hollywood, signed a contract in 1920 with Paramount for $100,000 a year. The equivalent today would be $15 million.
Well, you didn't even let me guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. You want to guess?
No, now I know the answer. That's crazy.
So yeah, he was a very famous guy at the time. He was taking a break from his hectic film schedule for this party. And also he burned his ass. Let's just say that he had second degree burns on his backside.
Oh, literally burned his ass. I thought this was some sort of metaphor.
No. He literally
burned his ass.
Yeah, secondary degree burns on his buttocks from an onset accident. So he was taking a little time off because he couldn't sit down. He checked into the St. Francis, rented 3 rooms, 2 for him and his friends on each side, and then a room in the middle that was the party room. So Rapp was at the party. She becomes very sick, so ill, in fact, that an ambulance is called. She ends up dying a few days later at the age of 26. Many claims were made about, you know, what happened. Some claimed Arbuckle had raped her. There were 2 different trials. He ends up eventually being found not guilty, but, you know, all this stuff really kind of hurt his career.
Yeah.
So I did the usual Jonathan side quest.
Uh-huh.
And I found a whole lot. In fact, there was a whole lot of yellow journalism going on.
What is that?
When you clickbaity stuff.
Oh, TMZ.
Yeah, you're not telling the truth. You know, you're stretching the truth, even flat out lying and over exaggerating what happened for the sake of sensationalizing it.
Why is it called yellow journalism?
I don't know why it's called yellow journalism. I used to know. You know, it's kind of like J. Jonah Jameson when he's writing stories about Spider-Man and how he's evil and a menace to the city, even though he's out there saving people from all kinds of stuff, you know? That's right. Yellow journalism. The more sensational headline would sell more papers, right? So there was a whole lot of that going on. They portrayed Arbuckle as a gross lecher who used his weight to overpower innocent girls. I end up reading a paper by Elizabeth Fisher in the journal Constructing the Past from 2004. Her conclusion says, the events of that day in September may never be understood. Flawed reporting, untrustworthy witnesses, changing testimony, all make primary documents unreliable sources for discovering historical truth. Also, many are either lost or not part of the public record. Secondary sources that address the subject are faulty simply because they're based on the inaccurate primary documents. I found contradictions not only between sources, but often within the same source. So, did he do it? Only 2 people know. And in the end, his reputation was pretty much tarnished forever. He was issued a lifelong ban in Hollywood.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of saying a lot for back then.
He did eventually come back to Hollywood and did direct some stuff. Not a lot of stuff, but he directed some stuff here and there under a pseudonym. So he kind of got back in there. But still, you know, it's sad that she died. It's sad if she died the way they said she died. And it's just as sad if he did nothing and they did this to him.
Yeah, there's no good outcome there.
As far as the ghost goes, around the site of Virginia's grave, you'll notice an icy cold feeling. People have also heard what appears to be sobbing. Many people believe that she is still dealing with this tragic event. No one knows why she lurks in the cemetery, but many visitors have stated that they can clearly see her weeping on the edge of the pond located on the grounds.
What is it with that pond?
Well, that's the actress that was crying by it.
Oh, I thought this was two separate people.
No, same person, as mentioned earlier. I'm not sure why the pond. Why is she there?
I mean, if I was a ghost and I needed a place to cry, I'd probably go to the pond too.
Yeah, but you know, my thing about cemeteries and ghosts, you know how I feel about that. Why is the cemetery haunted? Because you're gone from your body a week earlier. Why aren't you haunting the place where you died? Or, you know, going back to your home or wherever?
I like to subscribe to the theory that ghosts are not trapped in one space. They can visit their loved ones wherever they choose to.
And I agree with that.
Because we so often go to the graves to talk to the people we miss, I think that draws their energy there.
It's possible.
I don't think they necessarily just haunt it because that's where their body rests. I think it's more right. So just like, you know, this is a space where people come to remember me and I want to be here.
It was the last big celebration, for lack of a better word, last ceremony.
And it is also your resting space, you know.
Yeah.
But I think you can also haunt your house, too.
I would be more likely to haunt my house.
I don't know where I would haunt.
I mean, if I can go everywhere I want to go, I would go a lot of places, but...
Probably the Steak and Shake drive-thru.
I saw a ghost in the Steak and Shake drive-thru at 3 in the morning.
I would eat horseshoes for eternity.
I have one more story from Reddit.
Ooh, I love a Reddit story.
And there's a picture.
Ooh, okay.
So here's the story. I've long been intrigued by paranormal supernatural occurrences. I've been a skeptic because I've never experienced these things in my life. My roommate and I attended a music gig a few nights ago that was being held in the Masonic Lodge on the Hollywood Forever Cemetery property. Attendees of the show were allowed to use the cemetery grounds as a car park. My roommate and I took full advantage of this fact and began walking around the very beautiful grounds even before we went into the venue itself. We walked until we hit a dead end. The evening was getting on, so we decided that we would walk to the lodge and catch some of the show and then come back and explore a bit more before heading home. As we were walking by a spotlit palm tree, there's a palm tree with a spotlight on it, I suddenly knew that on the way back, I would have to have my friend take a picture of me in front of one of the palms. I also knew, without a doubt, that there would be a ghost in the picture.
What? I love that.
It's like some soul was telling me that it wanted its picture taken. I got the distinct Ooh. Feeling that it was some star that perhaps hadn't wished for his fame to end so soon.
I mean, you're in a good spot for that.
There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
I asked my friend if she would oblige me with taking my photo on the way back. She agreed to it. I told her none of the other details. I didn't want her to think I was absolutely certifiable batshit bonkers because I was beginning to expect I was myself.
You need better friends because we would never judge you for that.
Never would have judged you for it. Would have been like, hell yeah, we're taking pictures when you get back.
Yeah.
We leave the gig and we walk around and explore another part of the grave area before going back to the trees. She starts making suggestions about which tree to use, but I'm walking ahead, not listening. I already had a feeling about which tree it had to be. She began snapping photos. Not long after, I could see in her face when she arrived, her eyes widened and her mouth turned into the perfect O shape. She looked at me, confusion in her eyes, and informed me I need to come look at the camera. As I walked over to her side, she said, "There's some little white skull floating above your head in this picture. I hope that's okay."
A skull? Okay.
I decided we had gotten what we needed and that it was time to go. We gathered our things and we made our way back to the car. There's three photos. The first photo is her and nothing in the background. The second photo is her and a very faint smudge. You can't really see anything. And then the third photo is the one she's talking about. You can see in the first photo that there's nothing above my head. In the second, you can see that there is a little light moving into the frame and she said that it traveled forward and almost had a little Casper-like tail when it moved. Then it settled in the part of the photo near my head, closer to the front, and she said the little orb began to develop some facial features. She was a little freaked out, but she handled it well. Anyway, that's my tale.
Well, that's a hell of a tale.
So here's her picture. Terrible picture. Here's the spotlight. You know, it's like really dark, but what we're looking at.
Okay, so just above her head, there's like a little white UFO.
But you can see there's like an eye here, and there's a little eye here, and there's kind of a nose here.
Oh, I do see that.
So there's kind of, but is that pareidolia? Is it what?
Very easily could be. It kind of looks like an ink blot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing is, she took three pictures back to back. Here's the first picture. Nothing there. Picture number two. You can see there's up here near the very top edge. There's a little bit of something. But at the same time, I think picture number two is a little farther out.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But the last picture, suddenly there's this thing here. Picture number two, it's very high. Picture number one, it's not there at all.
And it does look similar to the thing in the edge of the picture in picture number two.
Oh, there it is. Lemzy Mango. Thank you, Lemzy Mango. Sorry for not having that earlier.
Shout out to Lemzy Mango for actually supplying the pictures for the story you're telling. Love that.
This is me clapping. I don't know if you can hear it in the microphone, but
I think it's definitely a spooky looking picture. There's something there for sure. We don't know about a skull, but I could see it being an actual orb, not a dust ball or an insect, but an actual orb.
Right.
That was a really good Reddit find. I love when you find me a story with a picture.
Yeah, I like to find anecdotal stories from people. Otherwise, it's just a website looking for clicks, you know?
If you've ever been to a haunted cemetery, I know we have some around us. That one in Decatur is supposedly incredibly haunted.
Yes, yes. That is on our list for this summer.
People say that the one Lincoln's buried in is haunted.
Oh, Oak Ridge.
I was going to ghost hunt once there as a teenager, but I was pregnant. Well, I wasn't a teenager. I was 20. And my husband wouldn't let me climb the fence at night because I was pregnant. So I didn't get to go in.
He sounds like a smart guy.
Sounds like a buzzkill.
Well, Mr. Fun Sucker. Suck the fun right out of everything.
So send us your haunted cemetery stories. Like we said earlier, just send us all your cool, crazy stories. We want to hear it all. opaghost@gmail.com.
Or you can visit us on Instagram at instagram.com/opaghost.
Or join our Facebook group, opaghost. Jonathan will definitely share the same meme more than once. It's a fun place.
I do that from time to time, and then heaven laughs at me for it. Or you can check out our YouTube videos. Just search Opa Ghost on YouTube. We have over 100 shorts. Thanks for listening.
Toodles.